Welcome everybody to the Monday Night Chat Show, and today we've got a very interesting session because we're going to talk closely about what we learned from our elders. Wisdom is always something I've been very passionate about, talking to older people, people that are more experienced, and people that have been around the block, have learned from their mistakes. And the biggest learn we can ever get is from our mistakes. So I'm just going to share my screen and just talk about my friend John Farrell, whose guest house we went to in when I was five with my mum and dad in the days before holidays in Spain and things like that. And we went to his fabulous guest house in Westbrook Margate in Kent for our 2 weeks holiday. That's the only holidays my mum and dad had. My dad couldn't afford anything else. And I was privileged to go to his 100th birthday party in Perth, Western Australia. And there he is giving me just a few more of his tips. Sadly, he's not with us anymore, but there he is standing outside in Bow, in Stepney, his dad's rag and bone shop. And you don't know what a rag and bone man is. He was a man who walked around with horses, buying and selling anything really. It's probably like an offline eBay, I should have said. And there I am discussing with him on his 100th birthday a few things. And he's obviously telling me a few facts of life because my body language doesn't look too good, does it, with my arms shut, with my arms crossed. So I'm going to give you five tips from John, and then I'm going to ask five of my special guests to give their tips, and then we're going to have a brainstorm. So that's the plan. Wisdom from John, number one, love and be loyal to your family. I don't think anyone can argue with that, but we don't always see that these days. Help anyone who genuinely needs it. He was great at sussing people out, John. First impressions are the most lasting. I like this one. If you make an enemy, don't go back to a friendship, which is an interesting one. And finally, be a good judge of character. I didn't check the spacing on that, did I? But that's generally what happens sometimes. So let's go over to our first special guest, which is Tim in Texas. Tim, if you could unmute yourself and perhaps tell us what you learned from an elder that you came across.
Well, my sainted Irish grandmother was a very, very wise person. And she had a very, very difficult life. Husband left her. She never got divorced. She never married. She never dated again. Extremely poor. Not much formal education, but very, very wise. And one of the things that she would always remind me, I love being around her. And one of the things she would always remind me when I would say, oh, I can't stand this person, or that's a very mean person, that's a very bad person. She would tap me on the head and she'd say, Timmy, that is a holy, loving child of God you're talking about. Everybody is somebody's baby. In other words, somebody loves everybody. The other thing that stays with me very all the time, especially the last 4 years, is when I would say, and I'd make the mistake of saying, I hate this person, or I hate that, you know, because you get mad as a youngster. She would say, hate corrodes the container. And that was a big, big lesson to me. That person didn't care whether or not I hated them or if I really did hate them, but it certainly upset my life. So hate corrodes the container. And then when I would say, oh, I wish I had this, or I wish I had that, I wish we had more money, I wish we had that, she would tap me on the head again. And she said, comparison is the source of all unhappiness. Don't compare yourself to others. Don't compare what they've got to what you've got. And that was a very strong.
Brilliant, Tim. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And my uncle, I never met either of my grandfathers, but my great uncle was like a grandfather to me. And he would always teach me, go ahead and do it. If it's legal, and if it's not a felony, maybe just a misdemeanor, still do it. He said, you can never benefit from experiences you're not having.
Tim, that's brilliant. I'm going to ring the bell now because your time's up. This is the bell that Johnny gave me from his guest house, and this is over 80 years old. We think he probably, I've got to put it in front of me for you to see it, yeah, because I've got a green screen on. We think he probably bought it for a couple of pence down the Bow Road. Okay, now we go to Jane Gunn, please, Jane, if you're there and unmuted, that would be fantastic.
There we go. Well, the first thing to say is that I am a grandmother, and I'm actually about to be a grandmother again this year. So that's seems an astonishing thing, but there you go. So I assume I ought to be finding some of this wisdom myself to pass on. But the story I have, just two quick things to say, Derek. One about my Irish grandmother was that actually she was estranged from our family. I never met her. And in fact, and I've spoken about this in speeches from the stage, it's become part of what I talk about, because I didn't know I had a grandmother until I was 18. My mother had brought me up to believe that my step-grandmother was my grandmother. And then on my 18th birthday, she produced an envelope and said, here's the watch your grandmother left you, which she'd promised to give me, and told me the story of the missing grandmother. So I guess what I learned from the grandmother I didn't meet is how painful family feuds are, and actually that perhaps seeing things in black and white, that there's no way of bridging that gap, and we certainly weren't allowed to meet her and discover what the problem was, or to build a relationship, you know, that actually is perhaps part of the work that I do now in helping people and families to build resolution and avoid those kind of feuds. Thinking then just very quickly of someone who inspires me, and I wrote about last week, and Tim, you may know, Frances Hesselbein, who I think she's the oldest working CEO. I think she hits 105 this year. She was the leader of the Scout movement. She's written or co-authored a book called Work is Love Made Visible. And I love at my age to look at women who are my age and older, still working, still contributing, still writing, still speaking, and 105 just about, you know, it tops it really for me. So Frances Hesselbein, Work is Love Made Visible.
Fantastic, Jane. That's absolutely brilliant. Next, Will Kintish in Manchester.
Can I share the screen for a second, Derek?
You can try, yeah, you can try.
Have to let me. You have to go to security and share screen.
I have to make you a co-host, Will. Why don't we come back to you, and I'll do that while we're talking to perhaps Godfrey down in Askerswell.
Hello, everybody. Good evening. I didn't really know my grandparents very well, except memories as a young boy. My four grandparents were all born in the 1800s. I know I look much too young for that. So my father was an older father, and he always gave me pearls of wisdom. He was a schoolmaster, but one of the things I remember, he may have been a bit ahead of his time, probably in the 1950s, I was probably 9 or 10, he would regularly tell me to walk tall and look the world in the eye. And of course, some of us may remember a singer called Val Dunican in 1964 who had a hit, which was based on that. Walk tall, walk straight, look the world right in the eye. That's what my mama told me when I was about knee high. She said, be a proud man and hold your head up high. And that was my father. He would go on to say, look smart, dress the part, have clean kit, polish your shoes, dress for the person you aspire to be, and maybe in work, one or two jobs ahead of you, more senior than you. But looking the world in the eye and being very proud. The other thing he always used to believe in, it's an old saying, we'll all know it, 10% inspiration, 90% perspiration. And so work hard, don't rely on luck, be persistent, put in the effort. And then it's back to the one we all know, the golfer Gary Player, who said, isn't it funny that the harder I practice, the luckier I get? And Father believed in that, and those things have stayed with me.
Fantastic, Godfrey, thanks. Right, Will, you're the co-host now, so you can share your screen, but you're muted.
Okay.
Looks like you need to come on one of my courses on how to work Zoom, Will.
That is a picture of me over 60 years ago with my parents. My mother died 7 years later when I was 16. So a bit like Godfrey, I had no grandparents that I remembered. Have I come off?
Yep, you better go for it. The clock's ticking.
The only thing I can, my father was, he and I, we didn't get on too well. He was 60 when my mother died and I was 16. The only thing I can remember that my mother said, not those pearls of wisdom from everybody else so far, was, if you wait for the weather, the bad weather in the UK, you'll never go out and do anything. And that's why over the years we've dragged our kids and even our grandkids now, whether it rain, hails or whatever it does, if we're going to do something, let's just go out and do it. As you all know, it's never about the weather. It's all about the clothing that you wear to protect yourself. Isn't that a shame, everybody? That's the only thing I ever remember about my parents, the advice I was given.
Wow, but I think that's a fabulous piece of advice. Will, your dad looks a bit like Dennis Thatcher. I thought Dennis Thatcher, as soon as you put that picture up, I don't know why, but there we are. Now to Kate Atkin from Cambridgeshire. And Kate's got a favour to ask everybody at the end of the show. She's doing a PhD in the imposter syndrome, and she would like several people to... fill in her survey if they would volunteer. So Kate's an expert on the imposter syndrome and taking it to the highest level she possibly can. Kate, welcome. And what's your tip from your granny or your granddad?
Thank you very much, Derek. Now, it's a pleasure to be here. And I noticed when Annette introduced herself, you mentioned Nat West. I'll go, oh, maybe Annette might know one or two people. So I'm delighted to have the opportunity to put the link into the chat if anybody is interested in taking a questionnaire on, should be called the imposter phenomenon, but I'll let Derek off. He's not picked that bit up yet. Everybody tends to call it a syndrome. But it's interesting because one of the things with the imposter chatter that we have links to one of the tips that's already been shared by Tim, and that was the comparison is the source of all unhappiness. When you are feeling like an imposter, you're looking around at everybody else thinking that they're better than you, etc. But actually the comparison that you should make is with yourself. So my tip from me is compare yourself to yourself. So where were you this time last week, this time last month, this time last year? And what do you now know and accept that you grow into yourself? So that's me and my share linked to what Tim was sharing. But the tip that I've got is interesting because Derek's photo, the second one with you in red tops with John, actually contravenes my grandfather's tip, which has stayed with me since I was very young. And he said, never be photographed in sunglasses. And it's so interesting because when I think about Derek's work in negotiation skills, we need to think about people seeing the whites of our eyes. We need to think about people being able to see into us. We talk about the eyes being the window to the soul. And when you can't see someone's eyes, it just creates a barrier. And what I've noticed now is doing these online sessions, lighting becomes really important. Being close-ish to the screen but not in people's faces becomes really important. And the fact is now, thankfully, I've managed to find an old pair of glasses that are single vision, because varifocals do not work when I'm trying to do laptop work and write down and stuff. And I found a single vision pair of old glasses that have anti-reflective coating on, and they work a treat when I'm online presenting. So that's my tip, never be photographed in sunglasses. So let people see the whites of your eyes and allow them to know who you are from that window of the soul perspective.
That's a great tip, Kate, and I'll take that telling off from you now in the spirit. That was my first day in Perth, Australia, and the sun was out, but excuses are pathetic, aren't they? Just going to switch over to Gabby now for one tip before we get into some group tips. Gabby, are you there?
I am. Hello. So I had two very different grandmothers. The first one, her advice was always moisturize your elbows on a daily basis. And you know, I would watch her with her Pond's cream moisturizing her elbows every morning. And I thought, you know, what is that all about? But actually, as we got into conversations over the years, it was about self-care. About looking after yourself and making sure that you look after yourself first, because if you're not fit and healthy, then you can't be of service to other people. So always think, moisturize your elbows on a daily basis. And she was all about unconditional love and caring. On the other side, I had my other grandmother, who was an Ulster, hard Ulster woman from Ireland. And she was quite classist, she was very racist, she was quite fattist. And I learnt from her by actually moving away from her, because I saw the effect that her way of being with people was, and I didn't like it. So I learnt how not to be racist, fattist, classist, etc., etc.
Wow, we've already got about 20 tips there. That's absolutely, that's brilliant. Okay, I'm going to put everybody into breakout rooms now. Here's the rules on the breakout rooms. I'm going to create 8 breakout rooms. The person in the breakout room who has the nearest first letter in their first name to Z is in charge, and they have to report. That's probably Will Kintish is giving me dodgy body language as usual. So if I didn't
explain that, would you like to repeat the instruction, please, about the team leader?
The person with the first letter of their first name that is closest to Z, the back of the alphabet, is the leader. In charge and reports back. I'm going
basically to... Will, whatever room you're in, you're the team leader.
Thanks, Kate.
Yeah. Okay, so into breakout room, 7 minutes, and looking forward to the feedback.
What are we talking about?
Great question. We're talking about what tips you got from your granny or your granddad, etc., as a group. Here we go.
More prime, but you, that's fate for you. You were very, very, very lucky.
Yes, I was. I was indeed.
Okay, guys, should we debrief this and let's do this? Let's do this in order. And I think we've got about 3 minutes per breakout room. So if you go over 3 minutes, I'll ring the bell, and it's over to breakout room number one, which is Nigel.
Right. Kate, Gregor and myself, we had a very interesting discussion, and Kate gave a view from a great aunt who was a very wise lady, and the ethos of her saying was coming from the heart, speaking from the heart, but also not to create extra work. So only do what needs to be done. And the analogy attached to that was to do with if a cup or saucer wasn't dirty, stick it back in the cupboard. That was the idea of not creating extra work that had to be done. From Gregor's grandmother, who worked on a farm, the advice and guidance was to listen and then talk. So it comes back to having two ears and one mouth and really listening to what people are saying first before reacting. And for my grandfather, it was about not asking other people to do something that he wasn't prepared to do himself. So from a management or from a team perspective, if you're a team leader, don't ask somebody within your team or project to do something that you wouldn't be prepared to do for yourself.
Wow, there's some amazing tips there. Thanks for that, Nigel. Over to room two, which is Mary.
Right, well, I was with Andrew Plumridge and Betty Taish, and Andrew's tips included never get dizzy from doing good deeds, never sleep on an argument, never go to sleep on an argument. You can always spot an Englishman because he walks with a straight back, so basically don't slouch. And always use a butter knife, even when you're having tea on your own. It's something that you picked up. Betty was, tell the truth to your kids. She can't quite remember the particular words that her, I think it was her grandparent used, but she remembers the love and the caring. And being told it's hard work, it's important, to be happy doing it and you'll get ahead in life. And from my side, I've got the importance of hard work, not arguing in front of the children, importance of being polite and having manners, and achieving your own goals and wanting to achieve them, and not because you're achieving them because somebody else wants you to achieve them.
Fantastic. Thanks. Brilliant. Thanks, Mary. And over to room three, which is Tim in Texas.
Harry and I were talking about, Harry has a friend in Australia that he admired very much because he was a distributor of products, and he would go into the shops and rather than try to sell right off the bat, he would try to chat the people up and he would talk with them and he would engage them. And as a result, he got people talking, and he's kind of an example of someone who understands that revenue follows relationship. Mm-hmm. Rather than relationship following revenues. He also mentioned that his father was a wonderful example. He was a non-practicing barrister, a lawyer, but his opinion was always sought by organizations and publications because he was very wise, and Harry definitely noticed it. The third one was yet another one from my grandmother, who would always say, you know, when I didn't want to do something, she would always remind me, Timmy, if you can't get out of it, get into it. No matter how hard or difficult or unsavory one. The job, just do it and don't complain. And I really remember that. Like when I have to do my taxes or I have to mow the lawn or tend the garden, can't get out of it, get into it.
That's a great one. Thank you very much. That's great. Great, Tim. On to room four, which is Tony. Tony in San Francisco.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. I had two wonderful ladies in the room with me. Christine talked about her mom or her granny that, it's just amazing, that she lived through World War I and World War II. And during this time that she had feels that she had two breakdowns in that time, and mental health at that time, and we were discussing, is actually thought to be a bad thing now. And but one of the things that she learned from her grandmother was that depression is not necessarily a sign of being weak. It's more so that, it's people who are put a lot of things on themselves and are doing a lot of things and that care about that usually end up being depressed more so than people who don't really care about anything or don't have anything that they're really doing. So a lot of times that it just shows that it's more, depression and mental health issues are more, not necessarily make you weak, but it's oftentimes because you're actually very strong and very active in doing a lot of things. And hopefully I put that out there right, Christine. Don't think that you're weak because you're, is what I got out of it, that You know, if you're in depression or have had depression or, you know, feelings like that. And then Gabrielle had some wonderful, you heard some of her comments from some of her grandmothers and things, but two that she talked about were, you know, the importance of organization and being able to be organized in your life. And one of her grandmothers, the one, the racist and lady, used to be very organized in that she would always keep tabs on all the meals that she fed for her husband, her grandfather, and so that she didn't provide him, because that was her goal and her job at the time was to support her husband and be there for him. So she always made sure that she had what he ate down so that she didn't give him the same thing. Or if family or visitors would come, she would also, you know, keep track of whatever she fed them so that they also didn't get the same thing over and over again. So the importance of organization, you know, makes it very good. And routine, being able to, you know, set up routines, you don't have to really worry about things. If you've got it, you have it in there that you can make sure that you get things done because it's part of a routine. And then another one of our other grandmothers, the acceptance of everyone is very important, you know, so be curious about people. Don't really, you know, get, you know, upset or, you know, not accept them, but, you know, accept everyone, be curious about them, ask questions, find out what makes them feel the way they do or, you know, about that, you know, but always accept everybody for their differences and be able to, you know, get along with everybody.
It's brilliant. You got 20 seconds, Tony, sorry.
That's all right. Mine is my grandmother was very positive about credit. There's two things she said that follow you through life, your credit and your character. And one is a reflection of the other. You know, if you have good credit, it's very good. And then, you know, always have good character.
Fantastic, Tony. Tony is the secretary or the organizer or the managing director of the Golden Gate Breakfast Club. And I'm sure if you ever wanted to attend one of those meetings, Tony, I'm sure he would give you an invite. Is that right, Tony, or am I speaking?
Absolutely. You're more than welcome to get in touch with me if you'd like to come. I know Tim's now a member of the Golden Gate Breakfast Club. Betty is. Derek comes frequently. Everybody's invited. If you want to get up, well, actually, you're not getting up. It's
we nearly go to bed, Tony. Time for
you, 7 to 9 a.m. Pacific time in California. So you're fantastic. More than welcome.
But thank you. Thanks very much.
And a terrific speaker this week, Brian Wagner on vision. Very good.
And our own John Vine is speaking the week after, I think. So we've all heard John's story about the G8 summit in Glen Eagles. I'm interested in the G7 summit in Cornwall through those roads, how Mr. Biden's going to get his beast down those country lanes. That will be very interesting, but we'll talk about that on another show. Now we're on to group five, which is Lynn. Lynn, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. Okay, well, I think we all suffered a little bit from the fact that I don't think any of us had grandparents around very much, but however, we have come up with some various sayings. Brian's was, he's got two. Do what you like doing, which I think, you know, is rather than doing what people expect you to do, but do what you like doing. The second one is a very Irish one, not one I've ever heard of before, but if you experience the fairy wind, you will be lucky in life. Not sure what the fairy wind is, but that's quite different. Celia's was what's done is done, don't dwell on it, just move on, was the one that she came up with. I've got two. I've don't put off things to do today, do until tomorrow, do them today. And lastly, you only regret what you don't do, not what you do.
Yeah.
Brilliant, thanks.
I very much believe in that one myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what we all came up with.
Wow, thanks Lynn, that's brilliant. Over to room six then, Nancy.
Hiya. Yeah, hi. So I was working with Annette and Mark, and Mark came up with the point from his grandfather, I think it was, wasn't it your grandfather, Mark? Yeah, that said a good handshake is important. And so we were talking about that in regards to negotiation and obviously sales, you know, how important it is to have that good, firm, non-threatening, but also non-passive handshake, important out there. But we can't do it at the moment. And it's so difficult sometimes when you, if you encounter people, to not put out your hand, you know. We even had it when we could go to pubs, that we did do it a couple of times, and then we thought, nope, gotta stop. And Annette mentioned a great one that I'm sure we'll all remember anyway, good manners cost nothing. And that's a really great phrase for ourselves to remember, remind ourselves now, and to teach our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren as we get that far. And also, one of her grandparents was very keen on seize the day, carpe diem. So, you know, get on and do it today. Don't put off to tomorrow what you can do today. Gabby gave me some inspiration on one of mine, because I was struggling a bit with my grandmother, Nancy. Okay. Yeah, you say your name's Nancy. Yeah, my mother's name was Nancy. My grandmother's name was Nancy. My aunt's name was Nancy. But grandmother Nancy was a dame of the old South. And she had some real entrenched American attitudes on race. And I grew up in Latin America and went to schools with lots of brown and black children, was the only white kid there. So we had some reverse mentoring point there. So I was the opposite of her view. And I always took from people, I don't care what color your skin is, you know, whether we engage and get on. But she was definitely of the old school from North Carolina. Also my other grandmother, who worked hard her whole life in the Depression, she worked three jobs besides having nine children in there, so two along the way. Hard work never killed anyone.
Wow.
And it's, you know, true to some extent. I mean, yeah. All right, pass it back to you, Derek.
And everyone's called Nancy in your family, Nancy.
Oh, God. I've told my daughter she is not allowed to name a daughter Nancy. You know, let it go a few generations. Thank
you. Fantastic. Okay, over to room seven. I think that's Jill, just about Jill English, between Jill and Jane, isn't it, Jill?
Yeah, it's me. It's me. We had a bit of a round robin conversation, so not necessarily in any particular order. I was with Jane and with Godfrey. Jane remembered the delight of being read to, even as a slightly older child, and how important it is to spend time together in that way. I had one that I thought Tony might appreciate. Had he not, this is not Tony in the US, but this is Tony Artis. My grandmother always said, spend a third of your clothes budget on your foundation garments. My dad, and he probably got this from his dad, taught me my money lessons and said, you want it, you save up for it. You don't, you know, we'll give you money for your birthday, but it's your responsibility to buy it when you can afford it. My grandmother used to say, tell the truth and shame the devil. She was something of a perfectionist and used to supervise all sorts of things, even when she didn't know very much about it. And my grandfather used to observe when decorating that he'd been putting the paint on upside down again. We had to do it. If you're going to do something, then do it properly. Be the best you can and play a straight bat. So act with integrity, be honest, stand up and be confident. It was from Godfrey's father. I'll come back to one more and set you up with this one at the end, Godfrey, because I'd like you to do your little saying. We talked about all sorts of things, people who live with very little, people who were very resourceful. Jane's mother taught herself to do things that she hadn't learned before, like to cook and to dressmake to a high standard. I think we all shared, though, that our elders in our family used to keep things for best and never use them. And that's a bit, again, of reverse mentoring, I think. Best will never come. Enjoy it today.
Yeah.
Reusing wrapping paper and the importance of thank you letters. But Godfrey, you were talking about being frugal and living within your means, and you had a little Yorkshire saying?
Okay, very quickly. My father was a Yorkshireman, a particular part of the UK. Many people will know they have a particular attitude, but the little saying, and forgive the dialect, it was hear all, see all, and say nout. Ate all, sup all, and pay nout. And if there's out for nout, do it for this sin. And it's very Yorkshire, and it's quite wise in some ways. It's a bit selfish in others, but I think that sums up Yorkshire.
Godfrey, I think you should send that to me so I can put it in the briefing next Monday so people can pick that one up.
Please do.
Yeah, Yorkshire has a reputation for paying now. It's a bit like Scotland, but there are cultural things that we're probably not allowed to even mention now, are we? So thanks, Jill. Thanks, Godfrey. And the final group is Will Kentish.
Martin had a relation who inherited a small holding, and he had it for over 80 years until he died. And Martin's learning from that, correct, Martin, was resilience. That was his story. Charlene had a relation who was very religious, and her comment was, God will punish them. So I'm assuming we're talking about naughty, wicked, evil people. Now, John Lisby's learning was everyone to their own trade. And he told this story that he decided that he wanted to sell his house and he painted the outside of it. And when they came to do the survey, the survey was done. And then the potential buyers said, no, we're not buying it. And John said to them, do you mind telling me why? And the answer was, well, the outside of the house, the decorating was so amateurish, we've decided not to buy your house. But John, typical John Lisby, I said to him, and I was so right, I bet you put the house back on the market, didn't you, John, and got another 10,000 quid? And you know what he said? Yes, I did. So that's typical John. But I've told you before, I learned nothing, unfortunately, and had no grandparents and didn't learn a lot from my parents. But I've learned one thing from my third child, Anthony. He's always telling his children, two things I want you to do for the rest of your lives. Number one, be kind. And number two, always do your best. And I thought that was nice. So that's coming from the other end of the family tree. Back to you, Derek.
Thanks, Will. Wow. I mean, I've recorded that on Otter, and if anyone would be prepared to summarize those into tips, we've got about 50 tips there from us, but I know it's quite time consuming and everyone's time poor, but if somebody wanted to, we have a fabulous PDF which is almost a book there. I want to take this opportunity just to hand over to Kate Atkin now, because Kate would like a favor for her PhD, and Kate's studying a very interesting psychological phenomenon, I think it's called, Kate, not a syndrome, called the imposter syndrome, which a lot of people get, particularly speakers when they're just about to go on stage, all sorts of feelings. So, Kate, over to you for a few minutes to tell us a little bit.
Yeah, just very briefly, the background to me is I was brought up on a farm in Lincolnshire and the middle one of three girls. So I was the one that was shy. I failed the 11 plus exam, which is the sorting exam that says whether you're clever. Then you go to the grammar school. If you're not clever, you're not academic, you go to the practical secondary modern school. I went to the secondary modern school. My older and younger sisters both went to the grammar school. I didn't go to university. I don't have a first degree. And in 2013, I started a master's in applied positive psychology because my husband encouraged me to do so. And when I turned up at university, people were saying, oh, what's your first degree in? It's like, I don't have one. Oh, they let you do a master's without a first degree. Oh my God, I really shouldn't be here. I knew I couldn't do this. And that feeling of being like an imposter, of not being there, has been with me, I would say all my life, but since definitely since teenage years. And the thing that I didn't realize was that it actually has a name. And when I was doing my master's, which was in applied positive psychology, I came across the research and it fascinated me so much that I started to study the subject in more depth and did it as my dissertation. And it's Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes talked about it in 1978 as being an internal experience of intellectual phoniness. It's since gone from beyond intellectual phoniness to lots of different situations. And as Derek said, you know, speakers that can turn up and say, actually, am I good enough to be here on that stage might be the impact that we have of our mindset of, do I know enough to be here? So that could be termed intellectual phoniness. But there's also when you get promoted into a job role and people say, oh, my goodness, you know, I don't deserve this level of position, or should I speak up in this online meeting? You know, is my voice valid? Do I have a good opinion to share? So all of this different stuff in both work and home lives happens. And with the lockdowns and homeschooling and juggling, there's lots more of the imposter chatter going on for people. So since my master's, I decided that I was missing studying. So I graduated in 2015 with distinction, which I'm sort of going, how did that happen? But since, thanks, Derek, since my master's, I thought, actually, I'd like to know more about this. I'd like to know more about this phenomenon. I'd like to understand it more in the world of work, because so much of it is not work-based study. So much of academic research is done with students. I want to study middle managers, and doing a PhD, looking at the imposter phenomenon, I've needed to narrow down who I can actually interview, but the survey itself is open to everybody. Let me just put a click in and do a quick entry. So the survey link has come up again. If anybody is interested in just taking the survey, feel free to. But also, if you want to follow me on Twitter or find out more about it, feel free to email me by all means. And the particular sector that I'm focusing in, which is why I've referenced Annette earlier on, is finance and insurance. So for the PhD study itself, in the interviews that I will then be doing, will be finance and insurance, preferably middle management folks. But I'm finding it a fascinating topic. I'm finding my own imposter chatter crops up. I'm 3 years into what will be a 5-year project. So I've still got two more to go. And next week I have a meeting with my supervisors about my 3rd year annual review. So it's like, so Derek, thank you so much for allowing me to put a few thoughts out there for folks. And if you're interested in more on the topic, feel free to ping me a message. But if you've got any connections with finance or insurance professionals or are one yourselves, then please, if you're up for it, it's a 15-minute survey. So Derek has mentioned time poor, but it is only 15 minutes. It would help out a poor PhD student. So thank you very much for the time.
Kate, you're talking yourself into coming, being invited back and giving us a talk on the imposter syndrome. I always do this while I've got it recorded so that when I ring you for it, you can't say no. So will you come back?
I'm gonna say, I'd be happy to.
Fantastic. And that's brilliant. So you put your email address in the chat box.
Yeah,
it would really help Kate. And I agreed to let Kate come on and tell us about the imposter phenomenon. I still call it a syndrome. You'll forgive me, won't you, if I do that. I'm going to close the meeting now because it's 6 o'clock, but I'm going to stay on, invite you all to stay on and enjoy each other's company and swap a few stories. Thanks everybody for joining. If you're watching this on YouTube or listening to this on the Negotiators podcast, thanks for coming on. My name's Derek Harden. I look forward to you joining us live, Monday night live, and see you shortly. Thank you.